birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel.
Health, beauty and well-being. Listen to Radio Gorgeous every day now.
It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel.
Today I'm welcoming onto Radio Gorgeous a woman who is a successful journalist. She also is a woman who gives guidance and wise words to people in distress. She started off doing this for Times and now has a double-page spread in the Mail on Saturday, which is read by 6 million people. We're talking about Belle Mooney, who is telling us all about her book, Lifelines, Words to Help You Through. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
It's nice to be here.
So tell us, what was in your inbox this week?
Well, I had a letter from... another letter from a woman who has an Asperger's grown-up child who lives with her. And obviously about three letters. This is only this morning from bad marriages. Obviously there's a lot of bad marriages. That doesn't surprise you at all. And then there are always letters. I'm trying to think what the latest one was. But anyway, now I can't remember. But family problems. Family problems are huge. So you have... daughters-in-law who don't get on with, you know, their in-laws. You have very sad letters from grandparents who aren't allowed to see their grandchildren, often because of said daughter-in-law problems, and that kind of thing. So it's a wide range.
So it's family problems, it's relationship problems,
yes.
And then it's, I remember you saying also in the book, it's also tragedies.
Yes, well, bereavement is another of my categories, because all the letters come in either by email or proper snail mail, and they're all categorised. So bereavement, and I have another category which I call angst, you know the German word. It's just that, what are we living for? What's the point of living? I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm lonely. There are a lot of letters like that, which again won't surprise you, because we know there are a lot of mental health problems and that loneliness is a very, very big factor. So I do get a few letters too about people who don't get on with colleagues at work, which obviously can make you very unhappy.
No, really, you know. Because that's your work. Just think of how many hours you're at work.
And friendships. So friendships, you know, a woman has been... friends with this other woman since they were at university or school, and then they fell out over a wedding invitation. So Lady A wasn't invited to Lady B's son's wedding, and she's devastated, which you can understand, but there's guest lists and so on. Now, I mean, I'm big on forgiveness, and I'm big on saying to people, let it go. You know, that's that song from Frozen, let it go. You know, what's the point of angsting? But people do. People do, and they will, because they're hurt.
Yes, I mean, there's a friend of mine. I thought she was a very close friend of mine, and she didn't invite me to her wedding. And I'm still upset about it, and she doesn't want to be my friend anymore. And I still don't really know the answer. And, you know, and I still dream about it.
Well, that is precisely the kind of thing. And so what can you do about that? Well, that is, you can't do anything. So you have to make a decision. Either I forget it, let it go and say, well, maybe she was in a bad mood, maybe her life has moved on, all those things. Or you say, okay, bye-bye. I don't want to be your friend either.
Because there's two choices,
isn't it? I mean, there's no, you can't do anything else.
Now, I want to hear about the tragedies, because you say there are, you know, there are drivers that hit, you know, kill a child, or that's, can you tell us one that really moved you?
I did have one letter one dark January morning that had me actually howling in my study, and it was from a woman whose 11-year-old son had gone out to play in the village on his skateboard with his friend, and something made him lie on the skateboard rather than stand on it. And he went, and he just came to a junction in a small village. He went under a car. He was killed. Oh. He was 11 years old. And the mother wrote to me, And she wrote to me because I'd written my memoir, which was called A Small Dog Saved My Life. It wasn't just because of the Daily Mail column. And I'm well known for loving dogs. And she wanted to tell me that she'd found my memoir very helpful as well, because it was really about loss. And that she turned, this is what broke my heart. Every morning at breakfast, the boy's sister, who was younger, got the family dog and put the dog on the boy's chair where he used to sit. It was that detail. Well, yeah, God, I was just made me cry and cry and cry. Because and she didn't really want anything from me. She just wanted to tell me.
Radio Gorgeous, pirate radio for Vogue readers. Mmm.
Yeah, because you say that the actual emails are extraordinary, not always, but sometimes extraordinarily long, and then you've got to kind of edit them down and then give...
Takes forever.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I had one the other week, which was... It was five times as long as I could possibly use on the page. The lead letter, I can't use it any longer than 500 words. And that's long, compared with other advice columns. You see, you won't see letters run that long. Well, you won't. Mm. They're much shorter as a rule. But I want the voice to be heard.
Yeah.
Well, someone will send me a letter which is 2,500 words long. Nobody else touches them. I do it myself. Painstakingly.
Okay, so you edit it down, but then also you've got to answer the questions within that framework from the question, which must be hard again. So it's a lot of editing, isn't it?
A lot of editing and a lot of thinking. And I sometimes have to say, well, your uncut letter made it clear to me that something, you see, because I've got that extra knowledge.
Now, can you tell us, I know you hate the word agony aunt, and you're not an agony aunt. Can you tell us why?
Well, of course I am. It depends. I don't. It's just a question of terminology. The thing is this. I've been a journalist for 45 years, and I've written 30 children's books and 6 novels and lots of other books. I find the term agony aunt a bit reductive, a bit patronising. And I like advice columnists because it's got columnist in it. I'm a columnist. Mm. And so it's a slight pride thing, really, because I think when people say, oh, agony aunts, it's patronising. And because agony aunt is it's a female term, it's also, I think it's a put-down, you know.
So how did your column come about? Because, you know, you say that, you know, it has changed your life.
It came about because in 2005, I was recovering after a traumatic breakup. My marriage had been to Jonathan Dimbleby was 35 years long. And he left me very quickly and everything imploded. And I moved house, so I lost my marriage. I changed home. And we all know what... These are two traumas. These are two life-changing traumas. So then in 2005, I was sort of desperate for work, money. You know, there I was on my own after 35 years, and I had to earn money. So I wrote to... I've been a freelance journalist. You know what that's like.
Yeah.
I wrote to editors I'd worked for, and I said, you know, I'd love to have some work. And one of them was Sandra Parsons of The Times, now of The Mail. And over lunch, we were talking, and I was saying various things to her about problems that she had. She said... And then I said, oh, listen to me, I'm an agony aunt, mon que. So she said, have you ever thought of doing that? And I said... No way. She said, you'd be wonderful. And there it was. That's how it began, accidentally.
So how did it change you, though? Because you say that you have changed your outlook on life. Are you a philosopher now? What are you?
Well, I think I was... it's a complex question, which I do in a very long introduction to Lifelines. I try and... sort of explain all these things, and I find it quite complicated, really. But to sort of try and nutshell it, I think I was more optimistic back in the day before I did this. I think I thought there were easier answers to problems. I think I thought that God was in his heaven and all was right with the world. I don't feel that now. I feel that people make messes of their lives, and I don't think there is any political system which would ever make that different. Do you know, I think I used to be much more let's say radical, liberal, radical, progressive, whatever the word you want to use. And I remember being young and thinking that if you did X, Y, and Z in terms of legislation, people would be happy. No, baby, they would not be happy. People will be horrible to their children. People will be horrible to their parents. People, couples will tear each other apart and use their children as weapons in their divorces. That there isn't anything in the world which will stop this. This is human nature. So I guess I'm not jaded because I love doing it and I love my readers. But let's say I'm a lot more realistic than I was.
Gorgeous well-being, sex and beauty. RadioGorgeous.com.
What about spiritualness? Because every chapter's got a quote in it, which nearly everyone is spiritual. Have you become spiritual or were you already?
I think I was already. I've always been very interested in faith. And while I haven't lost my faith in human nature, that's not right, but I've realised that when people have some sort of religious or spiritual faith, Buddhism or humanism, yeah, if it's a belief in ethical systems, they're often happier. And I believe in prayer. I believe in the power of prayer. I don't mean the prayer gets you things, yeah, but somehow focusing and yes, thinking of a sort of a world outside yourself, the mm-hmm. spiritual level of life, mm-hmm. can be immensely helpful.
So it's asking, you know, the universe for help,
yes,
and it's trusting more, I suppose.
Yes.
I mean, if you start to trust the outside world a bit more, then you're going to relax more in yourself, aren't
yes,
you?
And actually also feeling that you can summon up within yourself the strength to find solutions to what's wrong with you. So let's say it is quite complicated, but I was joking to a friend, and in fact I do say within the introduction, well, I've become a small C conservative and I've become a Christian. It's not strictly true. It's
yeah, a nice, you become Daily Mail.
it's a nice word. Well, Daily Mail wouldn't say it was. It would believe in this. Okay, but you actually put your finger on something very interesting there, because I would say that this 10 years of all these letters and seeing all these problems for 10 years has made me realise that people do need structure in their lives.
So they can't be the free, because you were probably quite hippie-ish and
yes,
free. As you
yes,
say, it was radical. It was
now,
like...
Now, I was brought up in the 50s,
yeah,
which, of course, you were rebelling against.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the structures of state, of church, of, you know, of faith, if you like, of marriage.
Yes.
All those things...
Which you rebelled rules, against for
rules,
years.
Rules.
Yeah.
I now see, not that they're right or wrong, that's not what I'm dealing with, but that they do make people happier within them. You need help. You need structure. It's so, when children's so, lives mm-hmm. are chaotic
yeah,
because there are no rules within the home, and we know that children are brought up in tremendous chaos.
Yeah.
Often. That... they're most unhappy.
Yes, and the ones I do know that have been brought up, I had a friend who was brought up by a totally hippie mother who said, draw on the walls, go wild, do whatever you like. Yes. She's now, she loves being a housewife, and I'm not joking, she's got pride in it. You know, she's gone very kind of straight, you know, yes, and actually totally family orientated, and you know, it's
a bit like Safi in Ab Fab, isn't
yeah,
it? You remember
yeah,
Safi rebelling?
Yeah.
I always thought
it's
that
kind
was...
of clinging on to a structure, like
yes,
you say.
So
and
I
you think,
people...
and I think there's nothing wrong with it,
no, and I think that those that's where I say small C conservative, but that attitude to life is nothing to do with party politics at all, but it's to do with that small C conservatism that within those parameters, people tend to be happier.
You know what's really interesting? Because one of my questions for you is, if you're Prime Minister today, how would you change Britain? I know it's a big one.
Well, I don't think that David Cameron is doing a bad job. I really don't. And to that extent, I'm sure that a lot of your listeners who can't stand him won't agree with me. But as I say, I steer clear of it. I've made my Facebook pages a sort of politics-free zone. But I think you just we all want to work towards the same thing, which is a tolerant society, a fair society, but I do not want the overthrow of the institutions. I'm a monarchist. I'm a passionate monarchist. I like the structures that have made this country good, and I'm proud to say that. So I'm a monarchist, I'm a patriot. And so, as far as I'm concerned, David Cameron's not half bad.
Radio Gorgeous, online, on your phone, on a podcast, or on your tablet. Listen anywhere, anytime.
You were born at a time when it was like a brilliant time for social mobility. You were born in a working class family, but you had the chance. You probably went to grammar school when you went to a very good university, I imagine.
Yeah.
That was all free, and you had a fantastic career. So that's not happening now.
No, well, I think that's why the young, I can understand they resent these wretched baby boomers, of which I am one, born in 1946, you know, and we did have it so good, we did. And, you know, there were many more resources, and I look back and I think, I really am thankful for the education I had. I mean, my mum and I was brought up in a council flat, you know, and I now live
in... So what, were you bright and you got into grammar school, tell me?
I was right past the 11 plus, and we had, but in my primary school class, we had 50, because it was post-war baby boom. Yeah. All the guys came back from the war and they all made their wives pregnant, so you had a lot of babies. There were four classes in my stream, in my age group is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Most of the children in the top stream is 4A, 4B, 4C, 4D. 4A all went to grammar school. 4D were the ones who didn't.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of poor children, and in fact, we in the top stream had to go and hear the children in the bottom streams who were younger read, and those children smelt. And I remember to this day those children. So I was in that sort of aspirational working class, my parents going to night class and all that kind of thing, and there were these poor children all in the same school.
Yeah.
So I passed 11 plus and went to grammar school. And,
what university did you go to?
University College London.
Wow, so you got to London.
Yes.
What year was that?
So I was class of 66 to 69.
Oh, my God, so you were totally here when it
and
was swinging London.
Marching against the Vietnam War.
Yeah,
yeah, but I wasn't interested in that. I was political.
Yeah.
I was political and I was studious and, you know, I was... academic, you know, I wasn't interested in fashion. I made all my own clothes, but not like going off to clubs and stuff.
Yeah, you're too busy working.
I was too busy.
You're a serious student.
And I got married in my second year.
Wow.
So I was 21
incredible.
And I was married, and my husband and I marched hand in hand, Grosvenor Square, March 1968 against the Vietnam War. And the screaming mobs of people. Yeah, amazing, really.
What I want you to do, lastly, is to... you must know off by heart, actually. I'm not going to ask you the book. Your favourite kind of thought that helps you through.
Let me see. Now, I don't actually know off by heart because there's a lot. But at the beginning of Lifelines...
Yeah.
This is a nice one. This is from the 4th century. That is 4th century after the birth of Christ. So... talking a long time ago, and it was in Latin, and it's anonymous, but listen to the hope in this. It's lovely. Loveless hearts shall love tomorrow. Hearts that have loved shall love anew. Spring is young now. Spring is singing. In the spring, the world first grew. See, it's a promise there. Loveless hearts shall love tomorrow. And that's what I tell my readers. You never know what's going to happen. And so when people write to me and say, I'll never be happy again, you don't know that. Believe that you'll be happy, and there's a jolly good chance that you will.
Wonderful. So Bell Mooney's Lifeline is published today by the Robson Press. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
It was lovely talking to you.
Fish in the sea, you know how I feel.
This is a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com, produced and presented by Josephine Pembroke and beautifully edited by Ella Gray Thomas, 2015. It's a new day, it's a new life.
and fly out in the sun. You know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun. You know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done. That's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. Shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life.